of the Power of Us podcasts are not licensed therapists, medical professionals, legal advisors, or certified experts. The views and opinions expressed by the host are based on personal experiences and are intended solely for informational, inspirational, and educational purposes.
Hello, my name is JJ Holly.
And I'm Monica Daniel.
And welcome to another episode of The Power of Us. Today, it is our distinct pleasure to welcome Dawn Candy, who's the Executive Director of Hands of Justice. So welcome.
Thank you, JJ and Monica, welcome. For having me.
It's so nice to catch up with you again.
Thank you. Yes, yeah. It's been a while.
Mm-hmm.
Lots happened.
So many things.
So many things.
Lots of three-ring circus, you know.
It is.
So tell us about Hands of Justice and your background, how you got involved with this organization.
Well, First of all, Hands of Justice is an anti-trafficking organization. We serve survivors of sex trafficking, primarily women. And I got involved back in 2020 when my husband and I got custody of our granddaughters. Our oldest one was 16 at the time when she came to us, and at the age of 17, received a cell phone from her dad for her birthday, and behavior changed. Things started to change. And I
and
had a feeling,
it.
Yes, I had a feeling there was something going on more than just a teen trying to adjust to grandparents' home. Mm-hmm. I knew something was wrong. My friends kept dismissing me and saying, no, she's just a typical teenager. You know how that is.
Oh, yes.
Defiant, all the things. Mm-hmm. And by August, September of that year, she was gone. She ran away. We could not find her. None of her friends knew where she was. There was no contact. And sporadically for 3.5 years, we had contact, but we knew that she was being trafficked in Houston.
Wow.
We found that out, and I didn't know what to do. I've lived in this county for 30 years mm-hmm. and did not know what to do. So,
and you've been involved in this county for...
Yes, not just living,
that's
but
right.
working, playing, mm-hmm. all of it. And so through my search of desperation of what do you do in this case, I found Hands of Justice and reached out to the founder and just said, I need help navigating what is happening to my family. And she was amazing, got me in contact with a lot of organizations and people to help search.
Wow.
And like I said, it was a 3.5 year journey for us. Mm-hmm. As I was going through that process, I started grieving the loss of my granddaughter because the more time that was between when she left and what we were experiencing, I realized this child will not be the same mm-hmm. when she comes home. And so I started grieving her and I got to the point of being angry. And I decided I need to be productive with my anger. So I am going to do something. And I reached out to the executive director at the time and the founder of Hands of Justice and said, please plug me in somewhere. Mm-hmm. Let me speak. Let me tell our community that this can happen here and that it can happen to your family. And let me help protect someone else from going through what we're going through.
Mm-hmm.
So that's how I got involved. And that has been my mission and still is my mission. Today, and that is why I feel so blessed to be working in this arena, because I feel like it is part of my duty.
Mm-hmm.
It is my life's purpose. I've realized that over this last year in serving, that God put me right where He wanted me to be.
Mm-hmm.
And it's amazing. It's very hard work,
mm-hmm.
but it's also so rewarding when you find out that a victim has been rescued or recovered,
mm-hmm.
when you watch a survivor heal
mm-hmm.
and the journey that they take and the confidence that builds as they heal, it's been incredible. So mm-hmm. I'm so blessed. And a lot of people don't understand that piece of it. It's a dark subject.
Yeah.
Obviously.
Oh, yes. Thank you for providing the foundation of how you came in contact with the Hands of Justice. Would you like to touch more on the mission of Hands of Justice and
Absolutely.
What you guys do?
Yes. Yeah, so what we do is we do walk along survivors and we support them. We are advocates for them. We help them with economic empowerment. So through career readiness, workforce development, We provide scholarships for them, whether they need to get their GED, they want a certification or go to college, that type of thing.
Because there's so many barriers.
So many.
The recovery to get to the point where you can, you know, progress past that, that stage of your life.
Correct. And a lot of the barriers are not things that that they caused purposely for themselves. So they may come out with a criminal record. Mm-hmm. So they have felonies on their record. The trauma that they have experienced causes a lot of social anxiety and mm-hmm. I'll say awkwardness because there's no trust.
Yeah, that's been completely violated.
Correct.
I mean, how do you
deal
with being in a social situation when that's how someone took advantage of you in the first place?
Exactly. So there are a lot of obstacles that we help them navigate. The trauma-informed therapy that we help pay for provides a roadmap for them to be able to heal from those things and to be able to start building that trust again. And I think one of the things that we do at Hands of Justice is, and this happens organically, is we've created a community for them. When they come to us and they're in one of our support groups or they come to an event, they're at ease because, first of all, we don't call them out as survivors. It's not our story to tell. Mm-hmm. But we integrate them into social settings to their comfortability. And so they can be as involved and active as they want to be. Or they can take the background side and do something with us. It could be just participating in a support group. It could be, you know, having that advice and mentorship to another survivor. However they want to participate, that's what we allow them to do because it is their journey. And we're just here to help, support, and guide. So
your services, it's not just for teenagers, for adults as well, men, women.
Yes. So primarily we work with women. Mm-hmm. That's who our clientele tends to be. We do work with two safe houses here in Montgomery County that are teen safe houses, but primarily our clients are adults. And the average age, I mean, we got clients from probably the age of 25 up to 65 years old mm-hmm. who are survivors who are part of our support group. So, and it looks different for everyone. Right. There's no one experience that is the same.
And that's why I mentioned men can be trafficked as well.
Yes. And we've got some men that have been involved in our organization in the past who, not necessarily trafficked, but had a sexual assault type of experience at a young age and who wanted to make sure that people did understand that this can happen to men as right. well, mm-hmm. and that not all traffickers are men, but they're also women. There's just so many myths when it comes mm-hmm. to trafficking that people have this belief in their mind about what it looks like. So
what are some things that, as a parent or as a person who might be targeted need to look out for to go, oh, hey, this isn't seem right, and this
question.
Is going down the wrong path.
So, first of all, anyone with a vulnerability is susceptible, and a vulnerability can look like a child whose parents are getting a divorce, mm-hmm. because oftentimes kids take it on themselves and say they were the cause of that. Their parents fought because of them. Mm-hmm. Those types of things, and so I would say that for parents, be that nosy parent in the sense of monitoring their social media yeah. because it happens
they love
there.
That.
Yes, I know they love that. But it's so true. It is. And monitor behavior and friends. And even though you may know their friends, do you know their friends' parents? Do you know where your kids are going and who they're spending time with? And just, I think having open dialogue with your kids is so mm-hmm. important. Educate them on what it looks like. If someone seems to be paying extra attention to you, offering gifts to you. That's not mm-mm. normal. Mm-hmm. So just trying to give them that heads up of, if this happens to you, please know that you can come and talk to me about this. You have a safe space with me. And I would say communication is going to be key.
What would you suggest if the person did not feel comfortable with talking with a parent who should they look to?
I would really recommend them talking to a friend, someone, a trusted advisor at school. It could be their counselor. You know, our schools now are trained for this. Mm-hmm. They work very hard to be on the front line because they know that they're on the front line. There is still, I asked this question at our summit recently, is there still kid chat? Because back when my kids were younger, there was kid chat. They could call anonymously. Mm-hmm. There is still that component. And now, of course, they've, you know, gotten with the times and technology is more texting and different things, but it's still anonymous. So if someone wants to report that they think this is happening to a friend, they can, and they don't have to say their own identity. But school officials will check into it. And so then they also have the connection with law enforcement so they can report it.
Yeah. It's really important to have someone you can trust to open up. And you're right. It's hard for parents and kids to sometimes communicate, you know, whenever you say, hey, I want to talk to you about you possibly being, you know, sex trafficked. I mean, they just are going to, I've got to go.
Well, they don't want to talk about sex either.
Exactly. So. That's a whole other problem. Yeah.
That's right.
Not with their parents anyway.
No. That's true.
What are some things that you have going on that the public might need to know about, or how would someone get involved with you?
So our next big event is our Fashion for Freedom, which is September 18th. We're very excited. We have several what I call community celebrities, well-known community members who will be walking the runway for us and creating the awareness. So tickets are available at handsofjustice.org for that. Then we also, we've started a partnership with Thrive Offline, who is also a local nonprofit. Who teaches family and kids to get off their devices and to connect face-to-face and how important that is nowadays. And we partnered with her to expand a little bit more on the piece that she provides in grooming and what it looks like over social media and things to be aware of. We're doing that. Our very first one is the second Wednesday in October. I believe that's October 8th at 9 o'clock, Serenity Sips. And it's a casual conversation like this with parents just to talk about what does it look like. And let's give them some tools that they can walk away with and be aware of and help educate their kids as well. And so we'll do that on the second Wednesday for this last quarter of 2025. In 2026, we plan to continue, but that second Wednesday in January is a breakfast fundraiser for us at Trulux.
Oh,
and
great.
So we're going to encourage everyone to come there and be supportive for Hands of Justice there. But there's so many things going on. We have a lot of local businesses who are trying to support us and raise money for us because we are a very small nonprofit. There are only three of us on staff. We have two peer support specialists that are completely 24/7 client facing when our clients need them. You have to understand that client needs, especially when they've dealt with trauma, it's not Monday through Friday, 8:30 to 5. And both of our peer support specialists are so passionate about pouring back into survivors and just helping them to navigate all of this that they're very happy in their work. I'll say that because they get such a rewarding feeling inside knowing that they're helping. So,
yes. So are you needing more? How can someone volunteer help Hands of Justice?
Well, we have a couple of different ways. We also have a volunteer orientation and training coming up, which we encourage anyone who wants to get involved with us to start there. And so come to that. We teach you about human trafficking. We also teach you about Hands of Justice. But we also give you some trauma-informed training. The world is not trauma-informed, and it's unfortunate how people treat each other. And so that's really important to us because you could be volunteering side by side with a survivor, not knowing that that's who that is. But we never want you to say anything that would be triggering or offensive. Oh, wow. And so we teach you to be trauma-informed. We have a couple of initiatives called the Justice Alliance, one for men, one for women. If you've ever heard of 100 Men Who Care or 100 Women Who Care, it is gathering 100 to join a membership of $100 per year. The men's portion of that would go to helping to pay for transportation expenses. Could be an oil change, could be tires, could be a repair that needs to be done on a survivor's vehicle, and they don't have the funds for that. So it's a way for us to fund that area that we would need to assist in. For the women's side of it, we decided to earmark those funds for medical expenses, because a lot of times they don't have insurance. They need certain exams and things like that. Our advocates will go with them during these things because many of them have medical trauma as well. They weren't believed. They weren't treated properly. When they were, 76% of victims go through the ER. However, you also realize that many of them go through the ER and there's no report that they're victims. And it's just primarily because they haven't been trained what to do, how to do. Recently at our summit, one of the directors of ER nursing was talking about the fact that they're trying to do better. And some of the challenges that they face are that when the victim goes into the ER, typically a trafficker is with them or close by. They don't let them speak for themselves, right? They don't have any documentation about who they are, their identity, and things like that. And she said, we used to say, let's go do a UA. And they would take them in the bathroom to see if they could question and find out, are you a victim? Is this, you know, happening to you? Now, she said, traffickers go to the bathroom with them. Now they have to figure out what exam or procedure can we say, we're going to go do this, that they can't go in, like an x-ray or something like that. So just being able to have those kinds of conversations of how do we serve? How do we help identify? How do we help them feel comfortable enough to say, yes, it's happening? And then how do we get them the help they need?
There's so many struggles along the way to just to get them, to have people be aware that there's a problem.
Yes. And a lot of people, I'll tell you in our situation, a lot of people, male friends especially, wanted to just go and storm the place where she was. Can't we just grab her and take her? You can't do that. First of all, that's dangerous. You don't know what the trafficker's background is or what they're about and how their reaction will be. The other side of it is people say, well, why don't they just leave? Primarily because it's very much like brainwashing. There's a trauma bond there that is formed because, you know, typically there's a trust built, and that's why they went with them to begin with, because there was this trust built. But then once they're there, they don't leave for fear, because in our situation, her little sisters were threatened. We were threatened.
Of course.
They would
yes.
come and do something to us if she left, if she told any of that. And so there are a lot of things, like I said, misconceptions that people have of, well, they could just leave, or they could, you know, we can just go get them. Understanding there's a trauma bond, and that trauma bond, if you do recover them, causes them to go back.
And I was just going to mention that I'm sure there are a lot of instances where they leave, but they end up going back.
That is correct. It's very much the statistic is the same for trafficking victims as it is for domestic violence. Seven times. They leave seven times before it's final. And final mean, it could be that they were strong enough to break away. It could mean death. I mean, it just, it's very unfortunate. And so just, trying to educate the community about all of that is very difficult because, again, they don't want to talk about it. It is heavy, but we all need to be aware. And it's in plain sight. So many people pass it every day and don't even realize.
You could be at a gas station, or you could be at, you know, Walmart or anything.
It's why one of the reasons why we did create the Power of Us podcast to provide a platform for issues that people really feel like we shouldn't speak about, but these issues are here.
Yes.
And people need to understand how they can get help. Where are the resources?
And I'm so grateful. I'm so grateful that we were able to come together and share our message and share what we do. Because like I said, we are a small nonprofit, and I could scream it from the rooftops about what we do and just hearing stories. We have a hotline on our website for Rescue America, and it is for anyone who is in that life and wants to exit and needs help doing it. And recently we got a phone call letting us know that someone called that number. That girl was rescued and recovered. She is safe. And I started to cry when they said it, because that's what we work so hard for. to get them out.
It was my next question. Tell us about some success stories. Is there any other stories you would like to share?
So, gosh, that was a really big one for us. But I also want to share just this just happened recently. We have a couple of new clients that are here in Montgomery County who have a lot of needs. And we can't do everything. Mm-hmm. So we partner with local organizations that do what we don't. And they do it very well. And so we've had one client who was taken to the community clinic for interfaith, went through the intake process with her advocate there, and their kindness and compassion made her cry because mm-hmm. she had medical trauma. And she could not believe that she was so respected and treated with dignity. And that was extremely rewarding for us in that sense. But it wasn't just her. It was also Community Assistance Center because she needed food and clothing. And the advocate took her there. And it was the same. And because we have formed these partnerships with these organizations to say, please help us serve our clients. And they are so willing. And the fact that our advocate was able to go and to experience and just see firsthand how these partnerships are working, for me, that's huge, because that is part of what I brought to the table, is knowing the community. Like you said, I've been here 30 years. Mm-hmm. I've networked. I've mm-hmm. been involved in the community. And now to see my friends coming together and supporting this community of survivors who they want to be successful, and they want great things in their lives. Many of our survivors are going to college and they're getting degrees in social work because mm-hmm. they want to pour back into the same community. And so for me, I feel like that is so brave. It is so courageous and so hard, because healing is not linear. Mm-hmm. And so we know that they're still going to go through things.
Well, that'll happen forever.
That's right.
You know, life trauma for them.
Yes, that's right. But being able to see it firsthand and just see the progress that they make, and just, you know, I mentioned the confidence, because we have connection events with our clients on a quarterly basis where I get to go just so that I can get to know them right. and see who we're serving. Mm-hmm. And just to see their progress from each quarter, of the more they come out of their shell, the more you can just see their confidence and how they've changed. I will say we've got 5 overcomers that are walking in the fashion show, and just the fittings have been amazing to see them light up with that confidence of this amazing outfit they get to wear. It's so incredible.
I'm glad you mentioned that, because we are fortunate in that aspect as a community, the resources that we have available. Another reason why we want to get, you know, the word out about the resources and the partnerships that we've all built together here in this community. So we are very fortunate in that aspect.
I agree. I feel like we are so strong here, and we have a great relationship with the task force here in Montgomery mm-hmm. County. And so we're in constant communication with them about client needs and things mm-hmm. like that. So even law enforcement is walking alongside us and helping us. And it's so great to have somebody's phone number when a parent says, hey, I think my kid's being groomed. Yeah. I've got screenshots. Mm-hmm. Great. Let me give you the detective's number. Wow. You need to file a report with them. We're going to stop it. But it takes mm-hmm. a village.
It does.
Yeah.
Yeah, people that will take action.
Yes.
Yeah.
I would say that the FBI, I went through the FBI community training, and they also provide assistance. They do walk hand in hand with our local law enforcement here. So that's a good resource to have.
I would echo that, because in our situation, we had FBI and U.S. Marshals, because my granddaughter was taken across state lines.
Oh, wow.
And so it was, it was one of those type of operations. And so totally new experience mm-hmm. that I never anticipated having, but mm-hmm. It was so good to see the collaboration with them. Yes. The National Center for Missing and Exploited Children, I tell people all the time, they are a great resource mm-hmm. Because they were also very communicative during my process. And so,
And we would like to always remain a resource for you and all these other organizations, however we can spread the word.
Yeah, I appreciate that.
Yeah. Thank you, Dawn.
Thank you.
Very eye-opening.
Yeah.
Is there anything else you would like to touch on that we didn't speak about?
I just encourage people, if there is a way for you to either get involved with us directly, go to our website, please sign up for our volunteer orientation and training. If you just, you don't have the time to do those types of things, but you want to help, funding is always appreciated as well, because our survivors are in need of various things throughout the year. And we do pay for trauma-informed therapy for them each month. And we have increased the number of clients more than 60% over last year.
Oh, wow.
And so because the awareness has been so incredible over the last 5 years and people are becoming more aware, it's been amazing. But what it creates for a small organization like ours is growth pains, right? Mm-hmm. So now we're looking at expanding staff. We have additional...
And you don't say no to anybody.
No, we sure don't. Right. We don't, and we don't want to put them on a waiting list.
Oh, gosh.
You know? So that's the thing. We're expanding our staff. We're expanding our support groups. And so the need is greater. And so in any way that this community can come behind us and support us, we would greatly appreciate that. Yeah.
Thank you.
Thank you.
And thank you for tuning in to another episode of The Power of Us. You can go on our Facebook page at The Power of Us Podcast. Please like, follow, and share. You never know who may need this episode. Thank you for tuning in.